You're listening to the Herpetology Podcast with Melanie White, and today I'm talking to you about how to play big and stop playing small. Are you someone who's committed but maybe a bit terrified of taking your business to the next level? Have you been playing small and you feel like you really need to step up and into what you are meant to be doing? This episode's here to help. It provides you with some proven methods to help you stop playing small and start playing big, so that you can step into your greatness and live a more authentic and purposeful life. Let's start by talking about what playing small really means. You've probably heard a lot of people using those words and talking about playing small, but have you ever really thought about what that means? I looked up the Cambridge Dictionary, and that says, to play small means to avoid risks and actions that might cause problems or make you feel uncomfortable with the result that you might not achieve what you want to achieve. In other words, it's a feeling of being uncomfortable and the fear of failure. It means that your actions are motivated by fear, insecurity, and maybe low self-worth. And it also means that you're not honoring your passion. Instead, you're settling for a life that is less than what you're capable of living. And in my words, and to me, in my life, I've been there, and I called that living a life of mediocrity. I decided that I didn't want to live in mediocrity anymore. I wanted to do something more powerful, something more meaningful and purposeful. So back to that definition, if that doesn't punch you in the face, I don't know what will. It's pretty blunt and out there and direct, but it's so important. To me, playing small means something like that old analogy of someone being a wallflower. You're someone who's standing back, maybe not sure of what to say, wanting to blend in and be invisible, to not stand out. And then that might lead you to think, well, how do I know if I'm playing small? What are some of the signs? Well, perhaps you might be letting fear defeat you. One thing goes wrong, you fail, and you think, oh, well, I'm never going to be any good at this, and you give up. You might also be waiting to be asked to do something rather than taking the initiative or offering an idea. You might be relying more on other people's opinions or directives rather than your own. You're easily hurt and crushed by criticism. You find it hard to say no because other people come first. You might be envious or resentful of other people's success. You find yourself matching other people's ideas and opinions rather than speaking your own, partly because you don't want to stand out and partly because you don't want to be judged. And another sign is that your life is full of clutter and meaningless stuff, which is really designed to keep you busy so that you can avoid pursuing your dreams, which is uncomfortable and involves risk. So all of that clutter and meaningless stuff that's keeping you really busy is helping you to avoid perhaps the more challenging work of playing big. Did any of those sound familiar? I know that I've had all of those at some point in my life, and I've worked hard over the years and smart to get myself out of those ways of being. It's definitely been a journey, and I didn't have anyone to help me along the way for the most part of it because I didn't know where to look. And I wish I'd had someone helping me sooner so that I could realize many years ago what I was missing out on. Because once you start doing the work of playing big, life becomes so much more exciting. Playing small really takes away from your ability to live a full life. And also, it's incredibly inauthentic. If you're too afraid of being judged or failing or not being good enough, then you're likely going to shelve your authentic self, who you really are, what you really need and want, so that you don't have to go through the pain of getting there, of failing, of being seen, of being judged. So why do we play small? Maybe it's obvious, but there are a few things that I've realized that might drive you to play small. Firstly, there's the whole physiological, psychological thing of the reptilian brain. Our brain is constantly trying to keep us safe, to seek pleasure and avoid pain. After all, it's a lot easier to sit on the couch watching Netflix or scrolling through Facebook than it is to face a difficult conversation. And that ties back into what I said earlier about having a busy life. If you're always busy doing things, even if those things are just watching Netflix, you're basically checking out of the work required to live a more authentic life. Also, there's the fact that some people go through traumatic experiences and maybe have dysregulated nervous systems such that they've become risk averse. You might have been through something significant that has caused you to be fearful of exposure to harm at the hands of others. For example, some sort of abuse or assault. Or if you're like me, you've been through burnout, and that's made you hypersensitive to certain situations because your nervous system became overloaded and dysregulated. For some of us, there's been also this conditioning. Maybe someone told you that you weren't good enough or that you didn't have enough. And those sorts of conditionings through our life cause us to adopt beliefs and to create our own narratives around those things. For example, a lot of fear not having enough money or of being alone or of being judged or criticized or of failing. So those sorts of thought processes and thinking patterns can keep you stuck in what might be a boring, unhelpful, or even a toxic situation, because those beliefs that you have are what drives your thought and actions. A common one is there's not enough money, or you have to work hard to get money. And so having a belief like that can stop you from taking action because you either work yourself into the ground or you're too fearful that you'll end up with nothing. And so you don't want to take a risk in the first place. If you had that sort of belief and you're building a business, you can see how it might be counterproductive. You might end up building a business to a certain level, but then not actually up-leveling in that to a sustainable, consistent income because you have something going on around money or not being good enough. Other causes of this small way of thinking, is playing small, can be that you might have started outsourcing your sense of worth, validation, and needs to other people. And this shows up if you're constantly relying on other people's advice or opinions on what to do or how to do something because you don't trust your own ideas or solutions. And this can happen especially if you've been in a controlling relationship because you've been led to believe by somebody else that they know better than you and they have all the answers. So there's lots of things that can shape you playing small. But as you might see, it's a combination of physiological and psychological drivers that work together to work against you and your ability to move forward. So now that you know why, let me just say that the great thing is that a huge part of turning things around is entirely in your hands. There's no magic pill or magic bullet or special therapy that you need to get through this, although therapy can be helpful in some situations. The whole point is that it's thinking that gets in the way. And no matter where that thinking has come from, it's just a thought and you have the power over what you think. So turning things around is about you developing the skills that you need to challenge and overcome your narrative, those underlying beliefs and assumptions that you have created for yourself, and for you to start becoming an independent thinker. Now, you might be wondering, well, what's an independent thinker? It's basically somebody who can use critical thinking skills to evaluate situations and points of view with curiosity and then use that to inform your own belief or standpoint. So in other words, you look at the world around you, all of the things and people out there, and you say, I'm seeing some people think this and some people think that, and I think this. Maybe what I think is a combination of those things, but perhaps something a little bit different. So you can hear it's very objective. And critical thinking is not about criticism. It's about standing back from the detail and being very objective and open-minded to new ideas, but ultimately Only using those ideas to inform and decide for yourself or solve your own problems based on your own judgment and perception. So critical thinking is a really important skill. When you think critically and you learn to come up with your own ideas and decisions, you become less judgmental of yourself and others, and you become more open. You stop blaming people. My goodness, isn't that amazing, that feeling of not blaming others? I had that realization when I was about 28. I was blaming somebody in my life for the way I was feeling. And one day I was driving to the shop and I had this realization that they were just being them and I was blaming them for something to avoid making decisions for myself. Whew. I didn't have a coach at the time. I had to figure it out on my own. It was a really big turning point for me. And when you can learn to unwind the thinking patterns and the thinking habits that lead you to think to playing small, which is an impulsive and reactive and fear-driven way of living, you can start to play big and you can start living the life that you were born to lead. So how do you do that? How do you play big? Well, let's just start by saying it's clear that playing small can really feel safe, but it's deeply unsatisfying. So at some point, you have to take yourself through your own decisional balance. What are the pros and cons of staying safe? On the one hand, staying safe keeps you protected from harm, from hurt, from pain, from loss. But on the downside, playing small, playing safe, leaves you unfulfilled, flat, purposeless, restless, jealous, resentful. It's not a hard decision to make in the end, but it does require you to see the tension between those two things and make a decision as to how you really want to live your life. Nobody can make that decision for you because playing big is the opposite of playing small. And it means that your actions are therefore motivated by the things that bring you true fulfillment and satisfaction rather than doing things for other people. How do you do it then? How do you learn to play big? Well, firstly, as mentioned before, you can become an independent thinker. And there are a few things that you can do to become an independent thinker, to have your own thoughts and your own ideas. Something I like to do with my clients is to help them come up with a list of things they like and things they don't like. It sounds easy and maybe a bit silly, but what I find is that people who have been outsourcing decision-making actually don't know what they like. It's really interesting. In that case, it can be easy to write down all the things that you don't like or the types of personality traits in people that you don't like. And then what you do like is pretty much the opposite of those things. So that could be a place to start, is to write down all of the things that you like and don't like in your life right now. Some other things you can do are to read books and to travel, because those things give you a bigger picture of how other people live, what other people do, how other people think, and you get a more expansive point of view. You don't have to engage directly, but you know what it's like when you go traveling and you see other cities and towns and cultures, and you get a deep appreciation for humanity and the differences and similarities between us. So reading and traveling are two ways for you to broaden your mental horizons and become more of an independent thinker. The next step you can do to become an independent thinker is to talk to different people with different opinions. So actually engage with them. And you could debate, but maybe it's easier to just ask why someone thinks that way. And then you get to hear their reasons and understand their perspective. So you don't have to engage in a debate, although you could. But if someone says, hey, I really believe blah, 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 and let's say it's something you disagree with, you can say, oh, tell me more. Why do you think that? Where does that come from? And you can do it in a way that's generous and authentic and open and curious. And you're not there to haggle with them or have a conflicting point of view, but just to hear why they think the way they do. That can help you to become an independent thinker. You're not engaging in the emotional debate. You're listening with the intent to understand. Another thing that you can do to become an independent thinker is to try new activities or hobbies that will help you to develop new skills and abilities. Well, how does that fit? You might be wondering. Well, often when you learn those other skills or hobbies or abilities, you get to apply those things to problem solving and decision making. And a few episodes ago, I talked about the book Range that described in detail how people who are generalists in life and have more hobbies tend to be more successful because the things that they learn to do in one area can often be applied to others. Here's a really simple example. Perhaps learning to play chess could help you to become a more strategic thinker, to plan your next move or three moves ahead. Have you ever thought of that? I play the violin, and learning the violin and playing the violin helps me to focus on precision and accuracy. I'm not really a details person, but this is something that helps me to use the skill of being detailed in a way that's also enjoyable. So those are a couple of things to think about, trying new activities or hobbies that can help you develop skills that might apply to problem solving or decision making. To become an independent thinker, you can also develop a practice of self-reflection. This helps you to be more self-aware and more in tune with who you truly are and what you want. So that could be journaling, it could be writing poetry, it could be doing online personality quizzes, it could be just keeping a diary of daily events, it could be writing an affirmation or writing three things you're happy about today. Anything where you're consciously thinking about what you think and feel is going to help you to be more certain about who you are and to get to know yourself a bit better. Another thing you can do to become an independent thinker is to ask for feedback from people who you work with or who are in your friendship group. Sometimes getting an honest, non-emotional account of what people really think can be incredibly insightful and helpful. In my business training, Passion to Profit, I get people to go out and do a variety of quizzes and ask their friends what two or three of their strengths are. It's really interesting what comes back. A lot of people say that they were surprised to hear what their friends thought of them because they hadn't thought of those things themselves. They felt humbled, but they also got new insights into how other people see them. And all of that is really important if you're developing a brand for your business because your brand has your personality. So understanding yourself in that case is really important. So I've just talked about six things you can do to become an independent thinker. And when you do these sorts of things, you get to know yourself better. You see life from a bigger and broader perspective, and you gain skills that help you to move forward on your own without needing others' opinion or approval. And then when you do that, when you become a better critical thinker, a more independent thinker, there are some amazing benefits. You become more open-minded. You feel more confident. You become competent at solving problems. You develop impartiality and leadership skills. And you learn to be more aware of your own thoughts and emotions so that you can stay above them instead of being sucked into them. You can also enjoy better relationships. So that's one part of playing big, becoming an independent thinker. There's another thing that you can do, and that is to notice and rewire any of these unhelpful playing small habits that you might have and replace them with healthier options. We talked earlier about the fact that playing small is partly psychological. And if you think about it, a lot of people who are in the playing small mindset are operating and responding automatically. You've become such an expert at criticizing yourself or operating from fear or telling yourself you won't succeed that it's just happening automatically. So it takes what I call conscientiousness. Here's a mouthful. I had to come up with a fancy term. Conscious conscientiousness That's a way of breaking those automatic habits that you do, your thinking habits, and to start to live a bigger life. And what conscious conscientiousness means is that you become more aware of what you're doing or thinking and consistently work on changing those patterns. So it's the ultimate in self-awareness leading to corrective action. Self-awareness, corrective action. I've done a lot of this work in my own life, and I've developed my own model, which I call factualizing instead of catastrophizing, that is. And it was a podcast that I did a couple of years ago. And it basically means instead of telling yourself all these emotional things about how terrible you are, you take the emotion out and you say it as a fact. So instead of saying, I'll never do that, I'll be hopeless and it won't work, you just bring it back to a fact and say, I haven't done this before. You see the difference when you take the emotion out? And this is really important when you're starting a business or starting something new, but also when you're going to the next level. When you're stretching outside of your comfort zone, these challenging thoughts and feelings come in, and often it's the work of your brain trying to keep you safe, trying to catastrophize things or tell you that you won't succeed without help or without other people's opinions or whatever it is, or approval. And so to stop keeping yourself small and to start playing big, it's about changing the way you think and changing the way you act. Psychology 101. Here are some examples I've used, and I'm going to share with you some thoughts. Once upon a time, I used to think they're better than me, and I'd feel jealous and resentful. But at some point, I caught myself thinking that, and I thought, gee, that's really unhelpful. So I changed that saying instead of they're better than me, which has a sense of finality and resignation about it. I changed that into I have unique abilities. See how different that is? I'm still different, but it's not judgmental or comparison. It's just saying I have unique abilities. So really, that becomes a more intrinsically motivated statement. Here's another one. One of my first go-to thoughts, if something new came up, I'd think, I can't do that. Straight off the bat, my automatic response was, I can't do that. So once again, I caught myself thinking that, and I changed it to, I will give 100%. So rather than thinking about the outcome and whether I could or couldn't, I would just be changing that statement around to saying, I'm going to give that my best shot. I'm going to go all in, commit, and give it 100%. That actually helped me make some decisions too, because if there was anything that I felt I couldn't give 100% to, then the statement would change to, I won't do that. I don't want to do that. So you can see that also there's not just whether you can or not, or whether you're committed to, it's whether you will or won't. So I can't do that has a lot tied up in it. And when you start to unpick that statement, there's actually a whole lot more behind it that can help you come up with a better version. So mine was, I will give it 100%, or sometimes it will be, I won't do that. Another thought, and this is in the catastrophizing vein that I used to have, was what if I fail? What if it doesn't work? You can go around in that loop for hours. Oh my gosh. I used to make myself actually answer the question. That's how I dealt with it, to see the actual consequences. What if I fail? Oh my God, what if it doesn't work? Normally we stop there, right, and we just imagine how horrible it'll feel. But what would happen if you did actually fail? Write down all of the things that could happen. When I did this, often the outcomes that I came up with were never as bad as it felt. What if I fail? Well, I've learned something. I might have earned less money. Some people might think I didn't succeed. I might have let some people down. But I didn't die. I didn't get exiled. I didn't go bankrupt. Not as bad as I thought. So your version of that might be different, but if you can actually answer the question, what if I fail? What would factually potentially happen? It's a really interesting question, and it also helps you to figure out how to troubleshoot and manage your risks. For example, if what if I fail means I'll have no money, then is there a way to do the thing that you want to do while still maintaining an income otherwise, so that you're not putting all your eggs in one basket? Unpicking that statement can be really helpful. And another thought that I used to have was, I don't know enough. A bit like the last one, I then asked myself, well, what does that actually look like? What do I want it to be? And maybe if required, what could I do to improve my knowledge? Sometimes I don't know enough is simply a way out because you're afraid of judgment. And if you see it for what it is, then perhaps you realize that maybe you do know enough or that you can learn. And sometimes there is a need to do a course. But don't rush too off to do the course. Often you'll find that you actually have the skills. It's just something you're telling yourself. So those are some thoughts that I've rewired. And then there are some actions that I've rewired. I don't know if any of these will be relevant to you. You might have your own version, but hear me out. Instead of not starting a business because I was too afraid of failure, I decided to pursue a passion and give it 100% commitment in terms of effort and quality of work. Instead of trying to do it all on my own and thinking I had to, I chose trusted partners to work with and sometimes trusted contractors to outsource part of my work to. So trust was a key thing there. And maybe there was a bit of perfectionism behind that. But I found people I trusted to work with or to pay to do work for me. Instead of sitting in fear, I made plans to move forward. And then I reality checked those plans based on research and sometimes helps from others who'd been there before. So it's easy to sit in fear and do nothing. My antidote was to make a plan. As soon as you make a plan and you write stuff down, your steps, you can see what's missing and where the gaps are. You can reality check, is that possible? Is that realistic? And then you can go and find someone who knows because they've done it and say, what do you think of this? Is this realistic? Then once you have that plan figured out, you know what actions to take and it gets you out of fear because you know tangibly what the steps are to get what you want. And I think the last and important point is instead of half committing to something and getting mediocre or half-baked results, I went all in with a focus on being my best and bringing my best. And often this involved extensive reading from multiple sources, observing others, evaluating what works and what doesn't generally in the marketplace and in my own business or life, and then planning and executing towards my well-thought goals. So I find often people half commit when they have a lot of unanswered questions. Will this work? What's the market already doing? What do people need and want? And so until you answer those questions, you're guessing and therefore you don't commit. So doing some research, getting lots of opinions and going broad can really help you to pinpoint what's going on and then to more easily make a plan and start taking action toward it. So as you'll hear, the things that I have been doing, the thoughts and actions actually tie into that cultivating conscious consciousness. It ties into becoming an independent thinker or a critical thinker. And what you might hear in all of this, the really interesting thing, is that it's not about success as an end goal. Whether you win or lose, whether you flourish or fail, what happens when you play big is that you learn to respect yourself. You learn to trust yourself. And you learn to focus on and embrace the process along your journey rather than thinking that happiness only comes at the end result. And it's in embracing the process where fulfillment actually lies, not in the outcome. So in other words, playing big is a process. And if you learn to love the process and just do it, you'll get the reward of satisfaction, integrity, and you'll live a more authentic life. Wow, we covered a lot today. Stay safe and play big. Challenge and rewire your thoughts, and you'll be happier and more fulfilled. Thanks for being here, and I'll see you next time.